Hi everyone, it's Joe here from Lawn Solutions Australia and welcome to this episode of Turf Talk, where I'm joined by the General Manager of Coolabah Turf, Scott Spedding. Scott, welcome.
G'day Joe, thanks for having us.
Now, Coolabah Turf, let's start there. Who is Coolabah Turf, what do they do, where are they and what are they all about?
Coolabah Turf's a turf production facility located in northern Victoria, so we're based in and around Echuca. We're about 290 hectare farm, 220 hectares of turf production, and the company's been in existence for 22 years, been a family business up until recently, and we're really excited to continue that legacy moving forward. We predominantly service landscaper, DIY and commercial clients, so local councils and commercial projects, developers, that sort of thing, as well as help build Aussie backyards, which we absolutely love because we get the opportunity to change people's lives one backyard at a time. So that's what gets us out of bed every morning.
Yeah, great. And as the general manager, your role is essentially overseeing?
Yeah, it is. It's predominantly an operations role. I have a little bit to do with everything, but not much to do with anything. So every day for me is pretty varied, which is exciting. I have my weekly catch up with all my team. As our business has grown over 20 years, I guess I was privileged to come into the business nearly 6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of small family businesses undergoing growing pains, mm-hmm. I sort of came in. My background is actually software originally, and then moved into business operations. And I look for ways that you can assist a business to be more efficient, but what is paramount for us at Coolabah is customer service. So just because you can do something efficiently doesn't mean it's going to drive a great outcome for the customer. So our focus is purely everything we do is based around the customer and ensuring that we maximise our value to them, that they're going to get an awesome result and an awesome product. Yep. That we can do it with an efficient team and obviously make that scalable. So like all businesses facing increasing cost pressures, all that sort of stuff, that's sort of my job is to just keep an overarching view on all of those inputs, make sure we maintain our customer focus and our value and that our product quality remains second to none, and that's what our customer base can rely on us for.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's going to take us into sort of where this episode's going to end up is we've spoken to a lot of people who have been owners and founders and workers on a turf farm, and it's been a very turf-heavy discussion, but you've implemented some pretty significant changes on a business that's gone through massive growth in the last few years. So I think it's going to be a nice change to go from a purely a turf discussion to something a little bit more businessy, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. But just as some context of people, we've had a lot of people owning and working in turf farms on this podcast so far, but from a production standpoint or a sales standpoint, Coolabah Turf is a really large turf farm. In and amongst our network, they're the biggest seller of premium turf brands in Australia. So I think it's important to establish that context before we get into anything else. Is we're talking about a 50 plus staff. That'd be right.
Yeah, generally we sit about between 45 and 50 staff depending on seasonality. So,
So it's a big operation and it's in a pretty tricky place to grow grass. I don't know if anyone's been to Echuca, but why don't you explain a little bit of the climactic challenges you face growing grass in a place like Echuca?
Yeah, well, we've probably got one of the best summers, so growing seasons for warm season varieties in the country. So, the founders of Coolabah, Brad and Sue Shearer, which people that have been in the industry would know, they're not in Echuca by accident. They're there because it is a really good production climate. Mm-hmm. So from late October through till April, we've probably arguably got one of the best climates for growing warm season varieties. Mm-hmm. Low rainfall, which means that our inputs are controlled, so we can get the moisture content and moisture level applications in a production sense pretty much bang on through irrigation. We're on one of the most reliable irrigation systems, the Goulburn system, in the country. So water allocations, continuation and affordability is really good in that region as well. Mm-hmm. And soil profiles are a variation of that. So the big challenge then comes for us in winter because we'll go anywhere down to sort of -7 with a frost over that winter period. So essentially, if you think we've got to grow 12 months worth of production in 4 or 5 months of the year,
yeah,
and then warehouse it. So mm-hmm. you obviously can't pop turf in a box and sell it when you need it. So being able to maintain the quality of the product and the turf in the paddock over that, our guys out on the farm and our farm teams, again, arguably do the hard yards probably more so than a lot of other farms around the country.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was getting at before is it's very hot and dry and very cold and dry through the winter and through the summer. And I've been there going to Coolabah Turf for a long time now, and I've seen a lot of different methods used over the years to try and mitigate the effects of the cold winter. Saw a helicopter flying around there once, not sure what it was doing, but probably a joyride at the time. But
a few of the guys got the opportunity to go up in it. But other hort crops use helicopters, so vineyards and orchards. So we're just east of us, so about 50 k's east is sort of from Kyabram across to Shepparton, and Cobram is a huge stone fruit area.
Right.
And in that early spring, so that budding season, they're trying to protect their bugs and buds, and they've used helicopters as a frost mitigation tool in the past. We gave it a crack. Which such big broad acre that we got, it didn't work, and it's not financially sustainable.
That's fine.
Got a great photo.
Yeah.
We've also tried frost fans, but again, because of the low canopy of turf, you're sort of couple of inches off the ground, the ability to get that air movement down along the ground was challenging with that technology. So we still resort to cloth. So we use, we call it frost cloth. For intensive purposes, it's like a shea cloth.
Yeah.
We've got about 15 hectares of that our team pull out on the ground just manually.
Big blanket.
Big blanket. Yeah. Tuck it in, put some pegs in. I hope we don't get too many windy nights. It causes much grief because the guys don't love coming in and seeing it all rolled up against a fence and have to straighten it out again. But yeah, really, that's what we're using to provide that winter protection. Mm. And, this current season, I think we're well into the 30 frosts.
Wow. Probably
10 to 12 of those were severe.
Yeah.
On a warm season plant in a production environment, that does set us back a little bit. Once you get that out of the production environment into a home lawn, nowhere near as much an issue because generally you've got buildings, fences, trees, those sort of things providing a bit of protection. But in a production sense where you've got a 20-hectare paddock with no protection, you're more susceptible to it for sure.
But so it's a lot of work that goes into ensuring a green product year-round.
Yeah.
So frost blankets are one of them. It's also farms in different locations as well.
Yeah.
I imagine you guys have put together to mitigate some of that as well.
Yeah, we've got a stunning little farm actually probably 40 k's from our main production facility, and it's out just off the side of the Murray River on the Gumbow Creek. Mm-hmm. More of a sand profile out there, so our soil temps different, and it's sort of surrounded by water, so we actually see a little bit of a microclimate there. That's we've seen some initial good results in some frost mitigation out there just because the water actually has a warming effect. When it's that cold, the water actually holds a bit more of a maintainable temperature, so that's providing us a bit of a microclimate. So challenge then becomes about managing your crop rotations and everything to make sure you're out there at the right times of year and returns and things. So it's never just as simple as what most farms further north, they probably get more rotations than us. We work on average one rotation a year. So essentially we're getting one harvest and then spending the rest of the year growing that in again to be able to harvest again the next year.
No, there's a lot of work that goes into it, particularly on the scale that Coolabah Turf is. And I describe it to people, it's not a turf farm, it's a turf factory, the way I see it. It's very perfect. It's very big and very perfect, and you pump out a lot of grass. So it's a credit to the team for the work that you guys do there. It really is something worth seeing if anyone ever gets a chance there in Echuca. But back onto you. So like I said, it's probably not a traditional journey for a turf farmer in Australia. Turf business in Australia, by nature, a lot of them are family run and family operated. Coolabah Turf has been for many years now, but that's since changed. But you're very entrenched in the Coolabah business and the Coolabah brand over the last few years, and you've made a lot of changes, but it wasn't always turf for Scott Spedding. So what path did your career take you on, and how did you get to where you are now? Because it's a bit of a unique change from software into running a large turf farm.
Well, yeah, it is. And I should say my software career is very short-lived because yeah, I felt I had a bit much personality to be a software coder. So I lasted my 12-month traineeship on that and then wanted to come out of the dark room. And I actually sort of moved more into network admin. And then that led, I worked for a great organization back then that had internal opportunities. So I started working more in the operational side of the business. And then I took on a branch operations role. So I was sort of managing remote sites and staff. The IT sort of being the backbone of my reason to be there, but that became a bit of team management and those sorts of things. And then I, my hobby is car rallying. I was organising car rallies for the Victorian Rally Championship on a voluntary basis, and I ran an event over in Mansfield, and some guys came to that event that were part of the national championship. They thought that I'd put together a pretty good event and approached me to go and work full time for them, running the Rally Tasmania down out of Burnie, and a couple of events down there. So I did. Some people say, you know, it's awesome, but, you know, do what you love and you never work a day in your life. So I thought, yep, here's the opportunity. And I've probably never worked harder doing 20-hour days. And, yeah, it was a great opportunity because I went from having an employed team or working with employed people to a huge voluntary base. So I learned a lot about people and what motivates people, as well as working in a field that I loved. Yeah, that bit of separation from family. My now wife was located in Melbourne at the time, so I did a lot of travel backwards and forwards. So decided to make the move back to Vic. And through that rallying, had met a few people in business and came back and worked in that operational sort of role and supply chain management, general management in Melbourne for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
And then we decided to move back to Echuca, which is I'm from near there originally, and I came back working for myself and just did what I think anyone in any business knows you've got to do is the phone doesn't ring, you've got to make it ring or you've got to get out there and pound the pavement. So I was just picking up the phone and cold calling local businesses, of which Coolabah Turf was one. Susie Shearer picked up the phone, who was the then owner, and as I touched on earlier, they were probably going through some growing pains within the business and just needed a bit of hand in that backroom business operations.
So when you
stuff,
say you're cold calling offering what exactly? IT solutions? Was that the main?
Just my tagline was make shit happen.
okay.
So pretty much, you know, and they're the sort of businesses I wanted to work with that it cut through. So I made the phone call and like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, I get shit done, I make shit happen. So what's on your to-do list and what can I help you achieve that you're not getting to? And that probably resonated well with Suze at the time. You know, they, as I say, the rest of history, we had a couple of meetings. And I had some other clients doing the same thing. So it was basically working with business owners and just helping them tick off things on their strategic plan, essentially. So when I first went into Coolabah, it was really obvious that their back-end systems weren't keeping up with their production facility. So Brad and the farm team had done an amazing job of expanding the farm and embracing automation. So that part of the business was doing really well. It was more about the scalability, the back end of the business. So how do we take this? And most turf farms aren't just turf farms. They're managing sales, marketing, finance, and transport. So they're reluctant transport operators as well. So being able to manage all of that and all of those resources efficiently, I guess I put a systemized approach over that. And then we decided to embark on writing our own custom software within the business, drawing on my background as a project manager and working with an external software development partner to do that. So what we wanted was a no-compromise solution in the business that it would do exactly what we wanted to do. And I guess Coolabah from that has benefited now for 5 or so years, and we're sort of looking to embark on a refresh of that journey. And, you know, for me, really exciting, I guess, agriculture as a whole, but also within turf production is automation and IoT or Internet of Things, as well as being able to bring all the facets of our business together so you've got one view of your whole business, which is sort of where we're heading.
Because what you touched on before is an important point, and a lot of people don't understand this about turf farms. When they think turf, they just think agriculture, and most agricultural businesses, their job is just to grow the product.
Yep.
Someone in comes and buys it all and takes it to market, where turf's very unique. So it's an agricultural business, it's a production business, it's a massive logistics business, a sales business, a marketing business, all under one roof. And automation on the farm side of things has been pretty prominent in the turf industry in Australia with auto stackers, auto sprayers and that sort of stuff. But coming in and making farm talk to logistic, talk to sales, talk to marketing would be a pretty big job, because I'd imagine a business like Coolabah, if you stack them up with other logistics businesses in the area, they're probably one of the biggest logistics businesses going around too with the freight they're using. So
yeah, as I said, we are in a bit of a food bowl region, so there is a lot of product moves in and out and around our region. So for that, we're actually lucky because of that. It gives us, again, some scalability within our capacity, so we can flex in the season. So coming into November, December, and again in the traditional, I guess, turf laying times of year, so spring and autumn, you know, the fact that you can actually install turf all year round now, and our production facilities sort of maintain that and have allowed that to happen. But we've still got those peak seasons. So we run sort of 9-10 trucks of our own daily, but we could have up to 20-25 trucks sort of moving within our business. So making sure the harvest is going to match the transport, and that then our logistics, all those movements. And, you know, there's huge compliance within all of those areas now as well. So obviously occupational health and safety, but as well as transport compliance and things within industry. So they're all things we grapple with, and yeah, then the sales and marketing side of it as well. So you know, people sort of say, "What do you do?" And I'm like, "Well, if, in a food sense, we're paddock to plate." So we're end to end or vertically integrated business, which even in agriculture we're starting to see more of. People want to know the origins from a quality control perspective. It's important for us to understand where that bit of turf came from, when and who and how. So if there ever was an issue, we can track it back, and quality assurance is big for us. So, which automation is, and, you know, GPS, all that sort of stuff's really helping with.
So you walk in and you tell Susan, Brad, you know, I'm going to make shit happen. I'm going to get all this sort of done. And how long did that take before you actually started wearing the Coolabah shirt? Was that a gradual thing, it?
Yeah, look, it was. I worked as a contractor within the business for probably 12 months, and Suze is pretty convincing, and she kept saying, I've got a shirt for you. And I'm like, look, I sort of wanted to do my own thing. But I guess the opportunity to work with a business like Coolabah with their progressive views and look to growth, obviously passionate about law myself, so the product and the quality thing resonated well with me and the customer service. So I felt they had a really strong brand and it was something I wanted to be part of. So I guess that final step to decide to pull on the shirt, I sort of said to them, I'll be here for 12 months and we'll flesh this out. And 6 years later, still enjoying the journey. My role now has probably become a little bit more day-to-day, but it's always there to make sure that we continue to maintain that continuous improvement and always ask how can we do things better without compromising customer service and or quality of product. So,
and what was the biggest eye-opener for you about the turf industry coming from the industry that you've come from, which is virtually totally different in the most ways of the turf industry? What was the biggest eye-opener for you coming into a big ag industry like turf?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I guess coming out of industry, I didn't have blinkers on, so I was pretty open to what the opportunities were to improve. But as I said, I was already sort of, you know, happy to see how automation was starting to work in the turf industry.
Yeah.
I think we've still got a long way to go. Like in that, like, labor continues to be a continual challenge, I think, it's for all businesses. But for me, it's how we can continue to optimize those things. So a big thing is often people saw IT as a cost to business. I've got to go and buy another computer, or I've got to spend money on a software subscription. And I think I was really lucky within Coolabah that Brad and Sue's the owners actually saw the value in that what would have normally traditionally been seen as a cost. So that resonated well, and I think then the business has leveraged well off that. So I think people need to realize that you can take that IT or technology investment off the expense side of the P&L and almost push it up into the asset onto the balance sheet, because its ability to scale and return it can be huge.
Yeah, and it's a unique way of looking at things, and a way, without being disrespectful to turf farmers, is probably not the traditional way turf farmers have viewed it, like you said before. And I think what you've done at Coolabah is pretty pioneering in the industry, and to take a business with massive organic growth and to systemize things like you've done is pretty cool. And I think getting to see it firsthand, I get to see a lot of turf farms around Australia, and without saying this, because you're a metre away and within striking distance, you've done a really good job, and the machine works, which is cool. So just looking forward now for Coolabah, so the last 5 or 6 years, the business in a lot of ways has gone through a lot of very, very significant changes. What's the plan for the next sort of 2 to 5? Is it about steadying the ship a little bit and just cruising along, or are you always looking to do something a little bit different?
Look, I think we're a growth business. I continue to talk to our team about that. So we want to continue to grow. And for me, it's important to always make sure that your team's growing with you, that you've got a team that is happy to adapt and change, because we – I continue to challenge everyone on our team daily, I guess, just because we did it that way yesterday, should we do it that way tomorrow? I can't thank the team enough for coming on the journey as well. Mm-hmm. So we've had a really adaptive team, and almost to the point now that they're the ones challenging me, which is great. Awesome. That's where we want to get to. So into the future, we will continue to grow. We want to make sure that we've got the right products for the market, and that's why our relationship with Lawn Solutions is so important, because of the R&D work that you guys are doing and that we're assisting with in the background. So, we want to make sure that when we are talking to our customer base, we can promise them that we've got the best variety for that purpose for their needs, and they're going to get the best outcome and bang for buck. So I guess that's what gets me out of bed. We're an important part of our local economy now, being a fairly big employer, but really proud to wear the Coolabah badge as well. And I think most of our team are as well, don't know whether you remember that old gas ad where the guy said, "Oh, where do you work?" And it was gas and fuel, and the whole barbecue went quiet. I think our team are pretty proud to say they work for Coolabah Turf. To their family and friends and in the community, and that's what we're passionate about is, I think continuing to be involved in the community, continuing to make sure that we don't lose sight of the value and the products that we get to deliver to our customers every day.
Yeah, no, it really is a strong brand, not just in the local community, but across the state as well. Coolabah Turf has been for a long time, built by Brad and Sue Shearer. And like you said before, once you get into the sort of the realm of Susie Shearer, there's no getting out of it very easily. You get sucked in pretty quick. But you've obviously done a great job continuing that legacy on which they built over the last 2 decades. The whole team has, and it's a credit to you all. And just on innovation, because you're a bit of an innovator, Coolabah Turf's an innovative business. Where do you see, again, question without notice, where do you see the next big step in innovation in turf businesses, whether it be production or whether it be in the office or whether it be in logistics? Where do you see as the next big step for us?
I think it is in automation across whole of farm. So really the industry's only adopted harvesting. We're down to one operator, but we've got to look across the rest of the production cycle. So everything from growing, weed mitigation and those sorts of things. The environmental pressures for us are real, and we're really aware of wanting to continue to reduce our environmental footprint. So whether that be across inputs, so looking at just ways to benefit from soil biology, so smarter farming, less inputs, and then utilising automation. So whether that be through spraying, weed identification, mowing, all of those sorts of things. And there's ag farm and farm machinery is coming a long way rapidly in that automation space and autonomous, so not just basically unmanned operation. I'd love to see the day where we're running our farm from a control room, because from a HR perspective and a safety perspective, that's awesome. But you can't beat that human touch. It still continues to be just such a big area of focus for us, that the guys that are sitting on our harvesters or that are operating a cart off tractor to get that pallet from the paddock back to the shed to go on a truck, or the person that's loading that pallet onto the truck. I don't think will ever replace humans for that finesse and that last check on quality. So for me, the human factor is always going to be really important, but it's probably those lower value repetitive jobs mm-hmm. that we can automate is where we need to continue to be efficient, but also sustainable and more environmentally friendly.
Yeah, I agree. It's important, the monotonous tasks. We take on automation where we can, but you can't beat the human looking at the product and saying, hey, that's right, that's not, that's right, that's not, and fixing it up that way. And the way I see it, I think mowing is probably the next big one for us. There's a lot of innovation in our industry now around autonomous mowing. It's getting bigger in the residential market with auto mowers and the like, but I think we've seen a lot. We were lucky enough to go to the US earlier this year at the World Ag Expo, and I think mowing is probably the next big one where we're going to see a lot. We got to see a demo. I won't name the company, but we got to see the demo for a fully autonomous mower, and they had a human dummy where they showed the safety features of it, and there was about 20 of us standing there, and they put the human dummy in front of the mower ran straight over the top of it and spat it out into a million pieces. So that wasn't a very good demo. But
this is the challenge that we've got. So when you're looking at something at 7 meters wide, the risks are a bit realer. So obviously there's still a bit of work to do, I think, in that space, but that is emerging. Also IoT, so just knowing your actual inputs into your square meterage within within a lot of other industries, within ag yield is everything. And we're probably, as an industry, we're not great at managing our yield and understanding the exact inputs into those sorts of things. Great. I think we've got a lot of work to do there as well, which we're excited about embarking on internally. We'll just sort of see where that goes, but you don't always want to be on the bleeding edge of that stuff as well. So we're sometimes happy to let, it's good the US are doing some of that stuff and they can do the trial and error. And then hopefully we can sort of leapfrog a bit off the back of that. So, they are doing some pretty awesome stuff over in Europe and that sort of thing as well. So traditionally, we've probably always looked to the US, but I think Australia has opened its eyes a little bit to what's going on in Europe within ag and that sort of thing as well.
Particularly our industry. And it stemmed from the research side of things. I think that initially got us to the US, the turfgrass research, which people who listen to this podcast will heard us talk about before. But because we're there now, we're starting to see all these other brilliant things with automation. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting. And just a slight segue. My only experience with rally cars is WRC 2 Extreme on the PlayStation when I was about 8 years old. Yep. So good game.
Colin McRae rally.
That's right, Colin McRae. So how do you get someone in IT or software, disrespect, into rally cars? Where'd that come about? And is it still a thing for you?
Yeah, look, it is probably not as much as it used to be. I've been lucky enough. I had a cousin that was into rallying when I turned 18, so I was silly enough to say, I'll jump in the co-driver seat or the silly seat or the ballast seat, whatever we want to call it. But, I think in that first rally we made at 13.5 Ks, it was a night event down in Gippsland and we snotted a tree, so it was a pretty short short event. And for some reason I thought, geez, that was fun. Yeah. And then there's actually and still is a shortage of co-drivers or navigators in rallying in Australia. Yeah. And I had the opportunity then to join a bit more of a local team with another young guy that he'd come out of go-karting. So his race pedigree was pretty fast. So I jumped in a Datsun 1600 with him and I think we won the Victorian Tour Drive Championship our first year, and then went on to win the 2010 Victorian Rally Championship with him, Nathan Reeves, in a Subaru WRX back then.
I know, one of them is. keeping up.
Yeah, that's it. And then, I don't know, another mate that I'd met through, again, just through the sport, he sort of said to me, do you want to jump in? And he'd actually been an ex-Australian rally champion and just wanted to go out and have a bit of fun. So he bought a car, in 2014, it was an Evo 10 Lancer, which was actually built by a team in WA and had won the Asia Pacific Championship the year before that car. So we were lucky to get into a really solid car.
Yeah.
Justin was a good driver and we just went out and had a bit of fun that year and managed to win the 14 championship as well. So as well as that, I'd stuffed around and spent too much money, I guess, like anyone that's ever been in motorsport. I had an early model Evo as well that I ran in the Autocross Championship as a driver back in 2006.
So you do some driving as well. You're not just telling the driver.
I'm always a frustrated driver, so you always think you can drive faster than the bloke sitting next to you in the silly seat. But I think that's what sort of helped make successful pairings in the navigator seat or the co-driver seat, is that you've got a bit of an understanding about what the car's doing and how it's doing.
Yeah.
And you can actually assist the driver or give some feedback on car setup or braking and those sorts of things. And while I'm certainly no expert, I think that worked well, as well as just having a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people take some things too seriously. So for me, outside of work, that was sort of my release to have a have a bit of fun.
It's very unique.
It is. And it's a great thrill. And if you're with someone safe and fast and, you know, lucky enough to have
safe and fast.
Yeah, that's right. and you're lucky enough to have, you know, both of those guys had some resources around them that meant that they had quick cars. Mm-hmm. And they were both talented drivers.
Yeah.
But then also really enjoyed my, I guess, opportunity to work on the admin side of the sport. So I got to be clerk of course of a few cool events, and I ran Safari Command, we called it, on the Australasian Safari, which was a 7-day rally in Western Australia for bikes, quads and cars and trucks and those sorts of things.
Right.
So that was a pretty cool event. And logistically, again, one of those learning things that you do about a lot of moving pieces. That event on reflection, and every year it pops up in your Facebook feed, you know, 10 years ago, whatever you're doing this. And, you know, you're sort of in command of 2 aeroplanes, 2 helicopters, like a heap of ground vehicles, 500 volunteers on the ground, plus all the competitors as well. And yeah, get to see some amazing parts of Australia through that as well. So it was a pretty cool event to be part of.
Yeah.
But again, just logistically and being able to picture all of that and pull it together and run it, as well as medical response evacuations and things for those unlucky enough to have an off or whatever it might have been throughout the event, was a pretty cool experience.
Easy and looking after 55 staff and
I wouldn't say so. I'm really lucky. We've got a great team. We pride ourselves on, you know, loving who we go into battle with every day on a daily basis, and I think that makes a big difference. So, you know, just wanting to be around the people you work with does make a difference. And you know, we talk about automation, you talk about everything else that you can do and software and systems and scalability and quality, none of that happens without having a dedicated, awesome team on the ground.
Yep.
And everyone's got to give us stuff, and that's something we look for in our team. And we you know, we don't apologize for that, but I think in return, everyone on our team respects each other so much because of that. So, we're pretty lucky in that space.
No, it's a great environment that you've all built there, and it's a very interesting journey you've been on to where it's got you to today, and you've obviously done a really, really great job with a big and well-known business within the Australian turf industry. So, it's a credit to you, and it's a credit to the entire team at Coolabah Turf. So, I think we covered turf, we covered IT, and we covered rally cars. So I think we're pretty good.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know. I guess some people might have taken something out of a bit of that.
It
is pretty diverse. But I think we had a group of young guys from a local school through our business a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Oh, who wants to be a turf farmer?" And no one put their hand up. And I said, "Oh, who wants to work in?" You know, went through all the facets of our business, and they all sort of stood there blank faced.
Yeah.
And I said, "It doesn't actually matter, because what you guys decide to do when you leave school, I guarantee you probably won't be doing it in 20 years. There might be one or two that are, but basically go out there, do something that engages you, have fun. It really is a great industry to be part of. You know, we do say we're changing lives one backyard at a time, or one sports and recreation field, or one local park. And we just love seeing that smile that comes on someone's face when our drivers turn up and they've got the kids and the dog there, and we're trying to wrangle them back because the forklift's going to get the turf off the truck. But it does. It just brings a smile to people's face, and they can take their yard from, you know, a bit of dirt to a finished product. They can be out playing on it, or letting the dog run around on it, or laying on it, whatever they want to do. Within the same day. So it's a pretty cool industry to be part of. Obviously being part of Lawn Solutions and what we get to share in with you guys is important to us as well. So
It's great.
Yeah, it's a good journey.
If you want to check him out, it's coolturf.com.au or Coolabah Turf on all the socials. You can see Coolabah Turf bring the human element into it really, really well. You just explained it just then. So it's definitely worth checking out and following their journey. But otherwise, we might wrap that up there. Thanks for sharing your story, Scott. It's an interesting one, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of benefit for a lot of people tuning in today. So appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for your time.
Cheers. Have you smacked one up pretty bad?
Yeah, a couple. That Evo 10 I was talking about, we had a brake failure coming down a really
less than ideal.